Welcome to the Savvy Shrink Podcast, brought to you by MHNRnetwork.com. I'm your host, Andrea Schneider. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, therapist, and life coach. I will be sharing helpful information for individuals dealing with varying mental health challenges, ranging from trauma and loss to recovering from toxic relationships in love, work, and family, specifically as relates to narcissistic abuse recovery. Other poignant topics will include maternal mental health and special needs parenting, among others. The podcast welcome guests who share their expertise in trauma-informed and evidence-based interventions, including the latest in neuropsychology. My ebook, Soul Vampires, Reclaiming Your Lifeblood After Narcissistic Abuse, is available at BookBaby and other digital online booksellers. I'm a believer in a strengths-focused perspective for my clients, which harnesses the power of internal wisdom and crafting the inner alchemy of healing. Please grab a cup of coffee or tea, and welcome to the Savvy Shrink. We're honored today to have Kara Bellew here. She has been practicing family law exclusively since 2005, and she understands that the court system can be overwhelming. Kara Bellew has helped countless clients navigate it successfully. She has also had significant experience guiding her clients compassionately through custody proceedings, which are often beset with the presence of mental health issues, addiction, and domestic violence. As a mediator, Kara helps couples communicate efficiently and assist them in reaching an agreement that feels fair to everyone. Kara is also an experienced and skilled litigator who has tried numerous custody and financial cases in the Supreme and Family Courts of Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Westchester. She is a graduate of Northeastern University School of Law and also holds a Master of Social Work from Boston University and a bachelor's degree in psychology from St. Joseph's University. We are so honored to have Kara Bellew here today with us. She is an attorney who is an expert in the field of matrimonial and family court, as we've mentioned in our introduction. And our listeners here with the Savvy Shrink podcast will be treated to a lot of great wisdom and information from her. So welcome, Kara.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Please take a moment to share with us, Kara, with the audience about your work in the field of matrimonial and family court. And if you could share with us some of the challenges that you see from your standpoint as an attorney in dealing with circumstances where one parent may have a mental illness.
Sure. Well, a little bit about my background. I've been practicing in the field of matrimonial and family law since 2005. And prior to going to law school, I earned my Master of Social Work. So I've always been drawn to understanding and addressing the intersection between mental health and the law specifically. And when I first started my career, I worked at an organization in New York City called Sanctuary for Families, which is a large domestic violence organization. It was there that I really honed my skills in court and specifically around addressing issues of domestic violence, which often presents with a myriad of mental health issues and concerns around not only physical abuse, but financial, psychological abuse, sexual abuse. And it really formed the foundation of my legal practice. And it was in my representation of victims of domestic violence where I really saw firsthand how challenging it is for victims and survivors to come into court to have their story heard and to face the oftentimes hostile environment of a court system where they're disbelieved, where their concerns are minimized and undermined. Typically, that's done by their partner who is abusive vis-a-vis his attorney. And depending upon what court you're before and what judge you have, you can also be confronted from hostility from them. And I think as an advocate, it's incredibly important to be able to be responsive to your own clients in a very compassionate way, and also to really educate the court as to what the issues are so that there is a shared understanding of what's happening and what those dynamics are, because that is often what is lost in translation, unfortunately.
Your clients are so fortunate to work with somebody who's not only highly competent, but very compassionate. And I think you bring a unique service because of your social work background and blending that so beautifully with law. Your clients are truly lucky. And I sure wish we could clone you and have you in California. Because there's such a need for compassionate legal representation, specifically for the clients that you talk about, survivors of domestic violence, etc. So it can truly be re-traumatizing for these clients to be in an environment where they feel, like you said, there might be a hostile environment. And for myself, in my practice as a clinical social worker out in California, I work with a lot of survivors of relational trauma, which can include domestic violence. It can also include psychological abuse, survivors of physical, sexual abuse, etc., but specifically in relationships. So I work with a lot of people who are in high conflict, sort of divorce situations, and the survivors of the abuse are often very concerned about going through court proceedings where their ex-partner or soon-to-be ex-partner has potentially a cluster B personality disorder, like narcissistic personality disorder, or perhaps they have a history of battering. And so there's this incredible trauma reaction, you know, going into court and trying to navigate the, you know, custody, divorce situations. So from your standpoint as an attorney, what can court systems do to protect survivors of domestic violence and other forms of abuse like narcissistic abuse and their children from situations like being re-traumatized or potentially something along the lines of parental alienation? I know those are a lot of questions packed into one.
Right. So I'm going to unpack it a little bit. I mean, there's certain remedies that a party can seek in court to address any number of those issues. So if there is a real safety concern, then you can go in and ask for an order of protection. I'm not sure what the equivalent is called in California, but right, a protective order.
Same, or a restraining order.
Right. And that can include not only yourself, but it can include your children. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one way that protection can be sought. Certainly, if you are dealing with a custody issue, it's incredibly important that those issues get raised so that the court can understand that in the context of its impact on the children. And certainly from my perspective, I always engage my client so that they understand how and when we are going to raise certain issues. It's important that the court is hearing about those issues as it relates to different things that are going on with the children. And the court may determine that it's necessary to appoint a forensic psychologist, for example, who's going to evaluate the entire family. Okay. And certainly if there are issues of domestic violence, psychological abuse, any of the number of issues that you've raised, parental alienation, for example, you as the attorney, it's really important that whoever is assigned, I think, has a background in what that issue is. Typically, at least in New York, lawyers play some role in determining who gets appointed as the forensic expert.
Okay.
Each judge has a different way of determining who gets assigned, but it often involves some input from attorneys. And particularly if there's an issue of parental alienation, for example, and it's really prevalent. That's a very nuanced and difficult thing for a lot of people to understand. You want someone with that background who can recognize it for what it is, can make meaningful recommendations about how to address it, and can really understand the damage that it's doing to children. You know, unfortunately, in custody disputes, parental alienation is a term that gets tossed around quite liberally.
Okay.
And it is often... It's often tossed around. It's really not happening. It's just something that's sort of tossed around.
Sure.
But in cases where it really is happening, it's so damaging to children.
Right.
And courts have to be really careful. And in my experience, what I've seen, courts are incredibly careful and incredibly deferential to experts. Mm-hmm. And they really rely on experts to understand how best to address it and what ultimately they determine to do relative to custody and parenting time. Okay. So I think the long answer is it really depends on what the issue is, mm-hmm. and how best to raise it so that your client is protected.
Absolutely. It's such a complex situation, and people are complex, and there's a lot mm-hmm. of shades of gray. But how fortunate that your clients are able to work with you and to be able to tease all of that out, to be able to be connected with high quality forensic psychologists who can really understand all these subtle nuances, which mm-hmm. I know in some circumstances with some of my clients, they felt that the forensic evaluator did not understand their situation and that it made their mm-hmm. circumstances worse. So it really sounds like having a super high quality team is vital, including the forensic psychologist, but also obviously the attorney. And I'm mm-hmm. sure there's other people that are a part of that team. Would there be other people that you would hire to kind of help support the client in terms of having their needs met?
You know, that's a good question, and I would say it really depends how the client presents. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time, I personally spend a lot of time with my clients once the forensic evaluator has been assigned. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time preparing for how to message certain things. I mean, certainly if there's issues around domestic violence or, you know, psychological abuse, things that are the psychological abuse, which sometimes it's more difficult for someone to get their head around, mm-hmm. because it's easy to understand, okay, he punched me and look, I have this photograph. This exactly. is my bruise. It's right. very concrete. Yeah. The things that are less concrete, it is more important to really make sure you're messaging that mm-hmm. properly,
yes.
and communicating it in a way that someone's going to believe you and really understand your narrative, because I think that's oftentimes what gets lost and what feels so disempowering to
yes,
people.
Absolutely.
Because they just don't feel heard.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. And you speak to something so important, that with psychological abuse, it's an invisible abuse. So there is no concrete mm-hmm. evidence there. There is no bruise. And so it
right.
really does fall on the client and their representation to really bring that to the table, because so often, mm-hmm. you know, survivors even have experienced what we call gaslighting, which is a sense of unreality, that they doubt their experience because they've been psychologically mm-hmm. abused for such a long time. So to have right. that validated and confirmed by an attorney and their team of helpers matters so mm-hmm. much in their healing process. So you speak
right, absolutely.
Some, yeah, you speak to some very important points, of course. And with that, what advice might you have for listeners who have been re-traumatized potentially by the court system, where a judge or perhaps an attorney believed the abuser's story, whether it was domestic violence or another form of abuse, and the non-disordered parent lost custody or spousal support due to the manipulative acting on behalf of the personality disordered abuser? Have you had mm-hmm. circumstances where you've seen that happen? And if so?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely. I mean, I've come in and substituted as counsel for people who've very much had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think it very much speaks to making sure that you have the right attorney.
Mm.
There isn't a one size fits all. Just because, you know, one person is really aggressive doesn't mean that they're getting the job done.
Mm-hmm.
Just because one person, I mean, I think it should really be tailored to what you feel comfortable with.
Right.
And who makes you feel heard. And my approach is to probably overly communicate, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I recognize that for the, you know, brightest person in the world, when you walk into a courtroom and you are overcome with emotion because mm-hmm. you're scared of what could happen, mm-hmm. what if I lose my children, then you're hearing legalese from judges, from mm-hmm. lawyers. Lawyers are being taken into the back conference room and you don't see them again for mm-hmm. an hour. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting in close proximity to your batterer. That's really, really difficult.
Absolutely.
And I like to overly engage with my clients both before and after mm-hmm. court appearances mm-hmm. so that we're really on the same page. Mm-hmm. And if that means I bring someone else from my office so that when I get called into the back, they have someone else with them, mm-hmm. someone else who can really translate, well, what are they talking right. about back there?
Right.
Why is it taking so long? You know, just even separating them from their batterer so that their batterer doesn't have access to them while they're sitting there. I mean, I've had situations where we've had to call court officers in to, you know, physically remove someone who's made threats, even in a courthouse, even with police officers standing, you know, feet away. Mm. And I think really building in all of those protections mm-hmm. and making sure your client feels not only informed, but really part of the strategy and feels on board with what's happening. I think that leads to a greater empowerment and a greater investment in the outcome mm-hmm. because it should not be a strategy that's, in my opinion, just driven by an attorney.
Sure. Absolutely.
It should be, you should work in connection with your client mm-hmm. so that the goals you are reaching are theirs and not yours.
Correct. Fantastic. I can see how the social work in you comes out too, and how lucky clients are to have not only an outstanding attorney, but also somebody who is a trained social worker, which I think adds a whole new dimension of great quote unquote bedside manner and being really psychologically mm-hmm. tuned in to the client who has been traumatized and really needs some hand holding through mm-hmm. potentially more re-traumatization once they see their abuser in court or potentially are cross-examined or what have you. They're mm-hmm. very lucky to be able to have that kind of information from you because I don't think that's always the case. I know from the clients that I work with in my psychotherapy practice, you know, I've heard some horror stories and I just, I'm really happy to hear that there are outstanding attorneys out there such as yourself that really do have great bedside manner that can translate what's going on, but that can also mm-hmm. empower their client and to stay centered and get through the experience because it's
right.
It's no small feat for anybody to have to survive that.
So no, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a great service you offer. And, you know, with that, I think it's a unique service that you have because you do have that special understanding of the psychological aspects of dealing with trauma survivors in relational mm-hmm. trauma. And I'm wondering if courts need more training in understanding the underpinnings of domestic violence and how there is a large percentage of folks that are batterers that have personality disorders. For example, NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, or antisocial personality disorder. And not to stigmatize, you know, batterers, but there's a lot of them that have really significant cluster B issues. And I wonder if courts need more training and if there is training that's actually out there, do you know anything about that, particularly for your state? Do you see any of that mm-hmm. training for judges?
So I know that mm-hmm. the judges in New York, they do get training on mm-hmm. domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And in New York, we have what's called integrated domestic violence court. In effect, combines mm-hmm. criminal, family, and matrimonial parts all under one judge. Mm. So for example, if there has been an arrest, mm-hmm. which then starts a criminal action, mm-hmm. and then someone files for divorce, those matters would be heard together.
Great.
So that one judge is dealing with all of the issues. Mm-hmm. So certainly those judges have more exposure to the issue because all of the cases involve domestic violence and involve those parties. You know, how much other judges see that issue? I mean, certainly in my experience, it comes up a lot.
Yeah.
And it has come up considerably in my private practice now that I'm not, you know, I haven't worked at a domestic violence organization for many years, but it's not as if that issue has now gone unnoticed or it's not raised. It's raised in a different way sometimes, but it still comes up quite a lot. And I think judges have more training and background in domestic violence than they would have in a personality disorders, which I think then, you know, raises the issue of the role of the attorney.
Yes.
If you are dealing with that, for example, if you're, you know, you represent a woman whose husband has a personality disorder and you really want the court to take notice of that because it needs to be a consideration in how custody is decided, for example, then I think the attorney really needs to educate the court. And oftentimes you can do that through motion papers when you're filing a motion and you're asking for certain things. You really want to create a narrative where the mental health issue becomes a focus.
Okay.
You know, if that's something that the court really needs to take notice of, the court then may call its own expert and have its own expert come in. And, you know, we briefly spoke about a forensic.
Yeah.
If a forensic evaluation is ordered, the court may want someone who has some expertise in that particular personality disorder, so that it can be educated as to its impact.
Absolutely. That's good information. And I think it's also helpful for our listeners to hear that there are different avenues to be empowered in the court situation. And it truly does go back to the importance of hiring the best fit attorney that can really kind of lead the charge with that. And it's fantastic to hear that there are ways that can protect the client from further re-traumatization of that sort of circumstance by having high quality, informed legal representation that can also educate the court. And so it does sound like there is more need for education specifically, though, about personality disorders and how it is such an invisible, insidious form of abuse. And you know, we hear so much about narcissism now and all over the place, whether it's in Hollywood, in politics, or blood work or family, it's all over the place. So I think now more than ever, it's coming to the forefront. But with that, we as therapists, as attorneys, social workers, I think we really need to do more educating of many different systems, including the legal system, the medical field, schools, etc., about what psychological abuse is. Because there's a lot of invisible tactics, like I mentioned before, gaslighting, silent treatment, blame shifting, pathological lying, etc. And you've already spoken to really how we can protect victims and survivors from predators. But I think your mention of educating the court and having expert witnesses speak to that makes great sense. Because my sense is out here in California, there isn't enough training specifically as relates to personality disorders. I know I actually worked at a battered women's shelter right after my undergrad. And that's how I was able to be informed about the need for psychotherapy for trauma survivors. And I know that San Diego really led the charge with specifically with domestic violence. And that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's such a shift now with needing to look at the invisible psychological abuse that sort of permeates all these systems. And it's just great to know there are folks like you out there that do their homework, that are compassionate, that get the information they need to share with the courts, and that clients can be reassured that they're going to have outstanding representation. So just really thank you for the work that you do to make the world a better place.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, really appreciate hearing your expertise. And I'm wondering if there's more that you'd like to share as we've spoken just now. Is there anything else that you're thinking about that you think listeners might be helped with in terms of what you do in matrimonial and family courts that you might want to share from your experience as an attorney?
I think trying to end it on a positive note, I mean, I've seen there are really wonderful judges and really caring and responsive people who get involved in these cases, whether it's the forensic expert or the attorneys for children. you know, sometimes even your adversary on the other side who, you know, they have to advocate for their own client, but they also recognize that there's an issue. Mm-hmm. And when everybody kind of rolls up their sleeves and can reach an agreement, it can really be meaningful and impactful. And I think it goes back to the issue of making sure you found the right fit, someone who mm-hmm. understands you and really understands the issues and is being responsive to you in the way that you need them to be.
Absolutely.
And that might look different for every single person, but I would encourage people who, if you don't feel like you have the right fit, don't feel as if you're stuck, because people make changes all the time. The stakes are high in these cases, particularly when you're dealing with your own physical safety, the mm-hmm. safety of your children, and how your children's custody and the division of parenting time is going to be determined. Those are really important issues. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure you've got a team in place that really understands and can address what your concerns are.
I think that's great advice, and it's nice to, like you said, leave it on a positive note that there are success stories, there are positive outcomes, and that
absolutely
yes, and so there's hope for survivors of not only domestic abuse but also other forms of abuse, whether it be psychological abuse, etc., to mm-hmm. to really be represented well and to have a great team of people advocating for them. So again, we are just really honored to have you on our podcast here, Kara Bellew. Thank you so much for your expertise.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And wondering if you could also share with our listeners how we can get in touch with you. For example, do you have a website? Do you have an email? How do people mm-hmm. get in touch with you if they have further questions?
Sure, absolutely. I'm based in Manhattan. The name of my firm is Rauer, Rower. It's Rauer LLC. And our website is rauerllc.com. My direct email is Kara with a K, K-A-R-A at rauerllc.com. And that's, you know, the easiest way to connect with me.
Wonderful. Again, you help make the world keep spinning on its axis and help people to get their needs met. And in a day and an age when there's a lot of crazy stuff happening out there, we need solid people like you to really be advocates. And again, really appreciate your wisdom. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Andrea. I appreciate it. I am really honored to be on the podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a beautiful day.
You as well.
Thank you again for listening to The Savvy Shrink. For more information about this podcast, go to thesavvyshrink.com or visit my website at andreaschneiderlcsw.com. This is your host, Andrea Schneider. Until next time.